This is Embodied on the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. Dating in 2020 would have been a struggle even without the added challenges of a global pandemic. But the release of a new Netflix quarantine-friendly binge-watch show, Indian Matchmaking, is reminding viewers that dating is difficult no matter how you approach it.
In India, we don't say arranged marriage. There is marriage and then love marriage. The marriages, they are between two families. The two families have their reputation and many millions of dollars at stake. So the parents guide their children, and that is the work of a matchmaker.
Congrats, I'm Seema Mami. Hi, darling, badaiyo. I'm Seema Taparia, I'm Mumbai's top matchmaker.
Indian Matchmaking is a docu-series about Indian and Indian-American singles looking for love and marriage with the help of the professional matchmaker you just heard, Seema Taparia. The show offers a close look at arranged marriage and how the process of matching partners has changed over time. Chapel Hill resident Manisha Das was one of the single women featured on the 8-episode series, and she joins us now. Manisha, welcome to the show.
Hi, Anita. Thank you so much.
Of course. Also with us is Jasbina Aluwalia, founder and CEO of Intersections Match by Jasbina, a personalized matchmaking service focused on South Asians in North America and the UK. Jasbina, welcome.
It's a pleasure, Anita.
So, Manisha, let's start with you. For people who have not seen Indian Matchmaking, how would you describe the series to them?
Yeah, I think if you haven't seen it, your description is pretty accurate. Binge-worthy is what I've heard. Cringe-worthy is what I've heard. Definitely a show that's taken, I think, the world by storm. And it's, you know, it's how... I would say millennials or single millennials are looking to meet people and looking to experts to kind of make that happen.
So it follows Seema Taparia, an Indian-based matchmaker, and she is working with couples throughout the Indian diaspora. Some are located in India, some have studied in the U.S. and moved back to India, some are living in the U.S., and follows them through the matchmaking process, pairs them with people, walks through the dates, videos the dates, and watches how everything unfolds. So you ended up on the show, and you match with someone named Vyasar, but I would love to hear how you got selected for participating. How did you become a part of the cast?
Yeah, I actually became a part of the cast. My cousin had told me about it. He saw an Instagram post, and I was single, still am single, but he said, you know, I think we've tried it all, and this is something we've not explored, so why not give this a go? You know, we've nothing to lose and possibly everything to gain. So it was introduced to me through a family member, funny enough, and yeah, he shared that I should try it. So we actually created a bio data together. I didn't have a bio data prior to the show, and my cousin and my sister and I sat down and we made a bio data together for me. So,
and bio data is a very common term in the show, but people may not know about it otherwise. So describe the bio data and what's in yours.
Yeah, I think it's just a description of kind of who you are. It's your we joked about it being like a resume looking for love. And so mine just describes sort of my interests, a little bit more about me as a person. There is a desire to include information like your date of birth and your height on there as well, just to kind of give, if somebody were to sort of look at this, they could get a picture of who you are in words. As well as photos as well. Yeah, includes photos as well.
Okay. So kind of like a Tinder profile, but with a little bit more specifics.
Yeah. A little bit more specifics. And definitely with the intention, like it was for me, it was created looking for, you know, a life partner, for love, for marriage. So
Jasbina, you are a matchmaker, and I know that you have binged the series like the rest of us. Tell me about what your impressions are.
You know, Anita, I need to start with one, echoing Manisha's words that, you know, privileged millennials, they are looking to experts in all aspects of life, including their love life. And I also want to say that I actually was interviewed by Smriti Mundra years ago before for the potential role of Seema Aunty.
So okay, so that's the director, the director of the.
Yeah, that's the director, the executive. Well, actually, she's the executive producer, I believe. I believe she might be the executive producer. It's lovely, and I think she, you know, an amazing woman, you know, in terms of her filmmaking career. So I was interviewed by her. And what's interesting, well, you know, spoiler alert, I'm not Auntie Seema. And part of that is our approach is actually quite different. So I think one thing that would be really worthwhile for, you know, for all listeners, Indians, non-Indians alike, to realize is that this is really, you know, one thing that's clear from the diversity of reactions, like Nisha had said, binge-worthy, cringe-worthy, right? We're hearing everything. So one thing that's clear from that diversity is that, you know, Indians are not monolithic, right? We're not monolithic. So, you know, the vision of partnership as well as one's approach as to how to find a partner would then logically differ, right? So I would say that, you know, starting from the bio data, if you would, I just want to do an experiment with Manisha here. And this is what I'd like to do. I'd like to, Manisha, you are single on the market, so I want to give you two sets of I want you to close your eyes. I'm going to give you two sets of people. Let me have you close your eyes. Picture what's behind door number one and picture what's behind door number two. All right. So, ready? So,
yep.
Motorcycle rider, entrepreneur, polo player, door one. Okay. Have your vision. Okay. So you're going to be deliberating about which one of these you want to meet. Okay. So Seema comes to you. Here's the bio data. Who do you want to meet? So here's door number one. All right, Manisha. Door number two. Engineer. Avid reader. Glasses wearer. Okay. Is the vision the same for these two guys that you have, that you conjured up as you were closing your eyes?
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't. Okay, curious? Who would you pick?
I'd probably pick door number two.
Door number two, okay, engineer, avid reader, glasses wear. Okay, guess what? You know what I picked? I picked both. Guess what? That is one and the same guy. Okay, so what is my point here? Well, these are two different yet 100% accurate descriptions of the very same guy.
It's
actually the guy I dated before I got married, okay? So that is my view on bio data. I think bio data, like any other marketing piece, right, can be spinned in any direction one wants to. Yeah. So for that reason, I'm not the biggest fan of bio data. And so that's just one aspect of how our process is different. But, you know, I think it's really important for everyone, right, to understand, again, this binge-worthy, absolutely. I absolutely love the show. I learned things about the show. I learned about face readers. I actually, you know, I work with many Indians, many South Asians. We've never used a face reader. I actually had one of my matchmaking colleagues ask me about that, and I had to be, you know, I had to be really candid and say, you know, this is the first time I'm hearing about a face reader.
Yeah. So in the show, they use astrologers, they use face readers, and one of the things, I mean, it's interesting, Manisha, to look at, you know, what Seema Auntie does and her approach. Obviously, it differs from Jasbina's, but one of the things that's really important to her is including family really early on in the process of making a match. And I want to listen to a clip from you and Vyasar meeting very early on, and which included both of your families. So let's listen to a quick clip.
I'm excited to meet Manisha. It'll be fun.
I suggested Manisha for Vyasar. Though she's 7 years older, they had common interests and common hobbies, and they both were close to their families. And Manisha is a very lively and talkative person that would be a very strong match for Vyasa.
Could you sleep last night well?
Yeah, I slept.
Since you found out about the boy and everything you read about it, do you have like any concern or anything that you want to talk to me about?
He seems really friendly, and I think we'll probably have a lot to talk about.
I'm nervous.
Good nervous or bad nervous?
It's mixed. The whole family is going to be there.
I mean, I've never been on a date where I have to meet his whole family.
I've been waiting for such a long time. So let's go and nail it.
Nail it.
So that's a clip from the new Netflix series, Indian Matchmaking. You just heard Manisha Das, one of the women matched in the series. She's with us now, along with Jasbina Aluwalia, founder and CEO of the matchmaking firm Intersections Match by Jasbina. So, Manisha, Indian marriages are a lot about the joining of families, like we heard. It's a huge part of the process, how the families get along, how the families think about and perceive one another. So what was it like for you to have your family be so involved in your meeting someone for the first time?
Yeah, I will say, too, I've always been raised, and I'm a firm believer in this as well, that when you do marry somebody, you're not just marrying that person. You also are marrying their family and vice versa. And so I think for me, it's really great because I am super close to my family. My mom's my best friend, and it was really important for her to be there with me when we decided that this was, you know, happening. My parents actually fell in love, which is kind of an odd I guess, fact about me, that they were neighbors, they fell in love, so they actually went against their own families to get married because they were from two different parts of India. So it's just interesting when I kind of approached them and I said, listen, I've been selected for this show, and this is something that I really want to do. They were extremely supportive in doing so, but they kind of did take a pause and said, are you sure you want to do this? You know, this is something that we didn't do, so there's no like pressure from us to do it, but you know, they were just kind of, they took a pause and sort of wanted to understand more about what the show exactly entailed. So yeah, I'd say for me, it was really great to have my family be a part of it. I think they know me better than sometimes I know myself. And so while it was definitely, what you heard in the clip was very accurate, I was both nervous, but also pleased to have, you know, my best friend by my side as I was making this potentially life-changing decision.
So you were matched with Vyasar, and there is a lot of conversation in the show about a good match and what constitutes a good match. And I'm curious for you what it was like to have that conversation in the context of being an Indian American in the U.S. today. Like, what is a good match for you? And did Vyasar fit what that was for you at the beginning of the show?
Yeah, I think on the surface, Vyasar definitely fit that. Seema and I had one or two conversations before kind of I was introduced really to Vyasar. So I didn't have as, you know, detailed conversations as some of the other participants, say, on the show did. But for me, it was always about, you know, I wanted somebody who was close, equally close to their family, since that's such a big part of who I am. I want someone who is ambitious with their career goals, because that's, again, something that, you know, is true to my personality. And then I also wanted somebody with a really great sense of humor. And those were kind of like my three things that I kind of pay attention to, you know, using a matchmaker or just being a single, you know, millennial looking for love. And so I think it was one thing to kind of learn about Vyasar. Like, we met, we definitely got along. There was, you know, something there, and we continued the conversations. And as we continued those conversations was when things kind of, we realized that maybe we weren't as good of a match as, you know, once was thought.
Well, Jasbina, I'm curious to hear your reflections. I mean, you mentioned you don't use bio data, but what else about the process and the show resonated with or differed from your own experience as a matchmaker?
Well, I think Manisha brings up some really great points that I want to dovetail with to really paint a picture of this in everyone's mind. So Manisha mentioned that the relationship didn't work out with Vyasar. So I have a question, Manisha. In the bio data, would you say that one of the reasons, and maybe even so much to say as a central reason or a big reason that you feel it didn't work out, would be you and Vyasar may not have shared similar, let's say, financial philosophies or attitudes about money? Would that be one of the reasons you think didn't it wasn't sustainable over the long run?
Yeah, I think that was definitely one of the reasons. I think we came from two very different worlds on many sort of important issues that I think build a foundation for a marriage. And that was what made this, I would say, you know, something that was different, say, from my past dating profile, if you will. When Vyasar and I were introduced, it wasn't introduced to just sort of see where things kind of will go. We had this, both of us had this end goal in mind, which was marriage. And I think when we realized that we, you know, it was, finances were one thing that we differed opinions on, and they were pretty much, you know, night and day opinions. It wasn't something that was like, okay, yeah, I can see where the path would eventually cross. We also differed on how we want to raise our children. You know, there were a lot of really big things. We differed on sort of career ambitions. And so those really for both of us, I think, kind of made us realize and came to this sort of pretty, you know, question point where we were like, is this really what we want? You know, do we really see a future here? And came to the, yeah, I think, conclusion that we had irreconcilable differences.
Okay, so thank you, Manisha. That's really helpful. So, Anita, so I want to apply what she just said to how our process is different, so we can. So, the way that the approach here, you know, from our perspective here at Intersections, is that these kind of because everyone who comes to a process of matchmaking is may not be serious. Like, our clients are not coming to us because they want to get married within a short time frame necessarily, but they want to get into relationships which have light at the end of the tunnel, right? That do not have these kind of irreconcilable, right, differences. That's the goal. So to get to that goal, it is, from my perspective, it's really important to understand things like, okay, Manisha, what is your, we actually asked our clients, like, what do you think about, what is your financial philosophy, right? It's not what is your income only, it's what do you think, like, from a lifestyle perspective, what do you think, what do you enjoy spending on, what do you think is wasteful to spend on? These are really important questions to uncover that, the goal being, okay, so we're not going to give you bio data, but we're going to vet these kind of things before you meet. So that you don't then, you know, those things, as Manisha said, you still need to get to know the person. I mean, time and interaction is going to reveal things, candidly, that I don't think bio data will, which is why I think it is important to have that. But that said, the goal of matchmaking would be to identify these irreconcilable differences prior to two people connecting, because like Manisha said, she and Vyasa can, I mean, the sense of humor is like off the charts. He can, you know, you can have great dates for, you know, for years, actually, for months, for years with that. But if these irreconcilable differences are there, at the end of the day, if both people are looking to take it long term, there'll be difficulties there.
Got it. So
attitudes, yeah.
Yeah. So Manisha, yeah, things didn't quite pan out with Vyasar, the relationship. You tried it long distance and it didn't last. You watched this series along with the rest of us. So this happened a couple of years ago and you watched it unfold on Netflix alongside all of us. What was it like to watch that now? I mean, and what do you think about kind of where you were then and where you are now in terms of what you want in a partnership? Has that evolved?
Yeah, I definitely say it's very surreal to see yourself on the screen. You know, it was an extremely intimate experience, one that required a lot of courage, just for me and my family. And I, you know, since it's kind of all just come out, I've really been trying to focus on what I learned about myself, because that's been the biggest takeaway for me. I learned so much about myself by doing this, by taking part in Indian matchmaking. And I've been using this time to really introspect more than I typically probably would have. I think there's only so much you can fit into, you know, a 1 hour episode about a person. And we, like you said, this happened, you know, a couple years ago. It started a couple years ago. We filmed last April. April 2019. And it was, you know, our dates went on for hours and hours. What you all saw was just sort of a piece of the bigger puzzle. I would say, you know, I've definitely learned more about what direction my heart's compass is going into. I am still single, as I think many, you know, media outlets have reported. And the other thing I would say is, you know, I think when this process all started, I was really keen on getting married and finding a partner. And my paradigm has shifted now to finding the right partner and marrying the right person.
All right. I'm going to keep you both with us as we continue our conversation just ahead. And we're going to look at some of the criticisms that the show has faced and hear your responses to them. We're going to continue our conversation on Embodied, on the state of things. Please stay with us. This is Embodied on the State of Things. I'm Anita Rao. We've been talking about the Netflix docuseries Indian Matchmaking. It features a professional matchmaker who tries to find love for Indian and Indian American singles from a variety of backgrounds. The show raises themes of suitability. What makes a person a good match for someone else? In some Indian communities, the answer to that question has less to do with physical chemistry or love than with skin color, caste, income, and education. Jasbina Aluwalia is still with us to talk about how she approaches those factors in her own matchmaking work. She's a founder and CEO of Intersections Match by Jasbina. Also with me is Manisha Das. She's an occupational therapist based in Chapel Hill and also a cast member of Indian Matchmaking. So Manisha, I want to start with you. The show has stirred up a lot of conversations, of think pieces, and has gotten a lot of pushback for not providing context to how it normalizes colorism and emphasis on caste. So there are these moments where people say what their ideal characteristics are of a partner, and it's often mentioned that people want someone who is light-skinned, who is fair, and a lot of things that kind of serve as euphemisms for talking about caste or are very directly speaking about skin color. And I'm curious how you feel about the pushback that the show has gotten for normalizing that.
Yeah, I think I want to start off by saying these are extremely important topics, and I'm glad that, you know, the show didn't shy away from them. There are, I would say, just even I see it in my own family, you know, extended family, there's major differences in how people think about dating in the generations before me, and definitely location as well. I think that greatly influences how, you know, people in India date differently than how they date in the U.S. I think change really is only going to happen if we can talk about the issues, and it's nice to see that the show has, you know, kind of sparked a lot of these conversations, because I think for so long, like, we've it's easier to kind of brush it under the carpet as a cultural sort of habit and not really talk about it. And it's really great to see that people are coming forward and having conversations about it. And I think until we, again, have these conversations, we're not going to see change.
And it's surprising, I think, maybe to some Western audiences, how much of a role caste still plays in Indian culture and Indian society. You know, only 5% of Indians marry outside their caste still today, which is surprising. I was texting with my dad last night, who is Indian, and he and my mom had a love marriage. And similar to your parents, kind of pushed back against some of the norms that were put upon them. But it is, I mean, it is really dominant that people want a certain kind of family structure to stay and go on, and that still exists today.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's very true. I think I've actually been even turned, I don't want to use the word rejected, because I don't think I was rejected, but people have turned down matches with me, or, you know, relationships with me, because I do come from, my mom's Punjabi, so the northern part of India, and my dad's Bengali. And people will say, like, oh, no, you don't fit one, you know, caste or the other. I've been turned down by guys because of that reason, and their families for that reason. So, yeah, it's definitely still prevalent.
Jasbina, I don't have much time, but I would love to hear a bit about the role that caste plays in your matchmaking process and how much it differs for your clients, kind of depending on where they are and the generation they come from.
Sure. So, well, we serve clients from their 20s to their 60s plus, so the generations do get touched, different generations do get touched. I will say, though, that that caste actually does not come up at all with respect to our process. The closest I believe I've gotten to caste would be screening somebody who mentioned, screening a medical student, actually, who mentioned that in the past, caste has come up with people she's dated. That was somewhat new to me. I personally, the clients who gravitate towards us don't tend to have caste as an important data point.
Got it. All right. Manisha Das, occupational therapist, cast member of Indian Matchmaking, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Jasbina Aluwalia, the founder and CEO of Intersections Match by Jasbina. Jasbina, thank you so much to you as well.
Thank you, Anita.
Joining the conversation now is Kira Allendorf. Kira is an associate professor of sociology and international studies at Indiana University, Bloomington. Hey, Kira.
Hello.
So tell me about your reaction to the show Indian Matchmaking as a scholar who studies arranged marriage.
I found the show fascinating. It was entertaining for me, just as it was, I think, for many Americans and many outside America and India and other places. So just on that level, it was fascinating and entertaining. But as a scholar, I also found it really interesting to watch how people negotiated these customs, and in particular, the non-resident Indians or Indian Americans, and how they did new blendings and hybridizations of sort of Western-style marriage patterns with Indian customs.
Well, tell me about the Indian custom of arranged marriage, and how did it originate? What is its history?
So the arranged marriage is really a constellation of behaviors that's a really core part of a patriarchal family system that's historically and still in large part today practiced in India. And at its heart is really who chooses the spouse. So as Auntie Smita said in the show, it's a blending of families, right? So in this system, when a bride marries, she joins her husband's family and leaves her own family. So the husband's family is looking for a daughter-in-law, and the girl's family is looking for the family that will take their daughter. So it's very important on both sides. So the arranged, we often think of that at the heart is who's making the choice of the spouse. And customarily in arranged marriage, it's the parents and other adult family members who are making that choice, not the young people themselves getting married. Although increasingly we see over time, young people are becoming more and more involved in that choice, and at a minimum, at least consenting. Although still today, we see plenty of marriages where people do not have a say, especially the girls who tend to have less choice than the boys. But along with that, you know, who chooses the spouse and is there consent from the young people involved are the criteria. So historically and customarily, it's largely based on caste, also language, ethnicity, religion, the relative economic and social standing of the families. And over time, as education has increased, education has become an increasingly important thing, as well as the job status or work status, particularly of the boy, but also the girl. And in India, whether or not the girl would be allowed to work after they're married. And as we saw in the show and you just discussed, skin color and looks more generally are also a point, more so for the girls, but for the boys too. And for girls, the word that so often appears in Indian matrimonial ads, whether she is homely, which in the U.S. we tend to think homely means whether they're, you know, not good looking, but homely meaning whether she has domestic skills, can cook and take care of the home. And age is also an important consideration. Generally, the girl should be younger than the boy. In India, on average, even today, the girls are 5 years younger. And there's an important regional divide. Historically, in the north and still today, you should be marrying outside your village, outside your family, whereas in the south, there would be a preference to marry someone within the family, either an uncle or a cousin, if we're looking at it from the perspective of the girl. And whether the couple is in love or even knows each other is not important or desirable before marriage. The idea is that you would not have a dating or relationship before marriage. That would come after. But now we are seeing the last couple decades growing interest in looking at the compatibility of the couple. So, you know, as Auntie Smita talked about in the show, she was looking at the compatibility of Manisha and Vyasa and saying they were, you know, both lively personalities and close to their families. So those sort of things, thinking about their interests and whether they would suit in the future.
Got it.
You wouldn't have this long relationship before the marriage.
Okay. Yeah. So that's one thing that's slightly different about this show is it almost mirrors kind of an online dating app in that Seema Aunty pairs people together and they go on a lot of dates versus kind of the way that more traditional arranged marriages are. Maybe you have one or two meetings. Maybe you do get the choice to mutually agree on the partnership, but you're not going to necessarily go on a bunch of dates and then decide.
Exactly. And still in India today, you know, roughly half or even a majority of women are not meeting their husbands until the day of the wedding. So, you know, they're meeting once or twice. Maybe they're just looking at a photo, or if they're more elites, looking at online material. So it's not, you know, this long premarital relationship.
I want to play a clip of the show of one of the featured clients, Ankita. She's an Indian-based businesswoman, and she seems to be the most progressive in how she thinks about gender and gender roles. And it starts an interesting conversation in the show. So I'd like to listen to a quick clip of Ankita.
I think nowadays what makes dating difficult is the fact that the basic interpretation of a woman who is independent and lives life on her own terms is that she cannot get married because she won't know how to adjust. They think these women are really cunning, how they say in India. Chalu.
Nice.
Nice.
This looks nice.
Yeah. Very nice. Looks amazing.
So just because you're independent doesn't make you non-marriageable or stubborn or arrogant. My partner needs to let me be the stronger woman that I am today. It's time to be happy. It's time to be equal. Yeah.
So that's Ankita from the Netflix series Indian Matchmaking, and I'm here with Kira Allendorf, Associate Professor of Sociology and International Studies at Indiana University, Bloomington. So I love Ankita's storyline because I think it brings up a really interesting kind of hypocrisy that is present in the show, which is that a lot of the women are given a lot of tools for education and financial autonomy, but then there's this point at which their parents seem to ask them to really return back to a much more traditional role of a wife in a marital partnership and kind of turn away from that more liberated, independent kind of persona that they have created. So I'd love to hear your reflection on that and how reflective you think that is of Indian American kind of gender dynamics in both India and in the diaspora.
Yes, I'm not as familiar with the diaspora, but actually on the show, I want to push back against that a little bit. I thought Ankita's parents, and she was the one who did this the most, were actually quite supportive of her.
Her parents, and, for sure, yeah.
Aparna's parents, too. But yes, in terms, or her mother, I should say. But more generally, yes, that is certainly a common situation. With this patriarchal family system, as I said, the girls become members of the husband's family, and they are expected to adjust. And this can be even at the level of the type of food they would eat, the type of family traditions, even the clothes they wear. The girl is becoming a member of that family. And even whether she would be allowed to work would be, a matter of some controversy today. So only at the most elites are these young women being highly educated and having these jobs and businesses like Ankita. She is, you know, very far from the typical Indian woman. But even with an elite like her, we see how she is experiencing these pressures of the broader marriage market, is not valuing her as, you know, a businesswoman, but as a prospective daughter-in-law and future, you know, family maker, homemaker.
So the Seema obviously has a very wealthy clientele. I'm curious about how the matchmaking process differs for those without access to someone like Seema.
Yeah, so matchmaking is not the typical, or a matchmaker is not the typical way these marriages are formed. Usually people are going through personal networks, so family members, parents reaching out to others. You know, at a wedding, you would see a lot of people coming together, so there can be a meeting and discussing and sort of evaluating who in the community is available. Also, matrimonial ads, where people take out ads, is also very common. And increasingly, as more people get access to the internet, wedding websites are more and more popular. So things like Shadi.com and Jeevansathi.com, and Shadi means wedding, and Jeevansathi means life partner, which is a popular view of what the spouse should be in Indian society. So those are also very popular ways to find spouses. And in keeping with the involvement of parents and families in general, it's often the parents that are posting these profiles on these websites and selecting prospective spouses.
There's also a big emphasis on astrology, and that is one thing that comes up in the show. Seema goes to an astrologer and brings the bio data of the various couples and has them analyzed. Why does astrology hold such weight in Indian marriages?
Yeah, so historically, astrology was a common practice. It's still practiced a lot today, although often they'll still go through with it. They'll just hope that it matches. And there's this idea that your spouse is fated. So there's you know, cultural sayings about your spouse is written on your forehead. So since the time of birth, it's known who your spouse will be. And it just goes along with, you know, these ideas of fatalism, and that it's written in the stars and it's fated. You're not making a personal choice, as, you know, we often think in the United States and sort of Northwestern European marriage processes, but that it's determined more collectively and even part of your fate, your astrology, your science.
One of the things that struck me in reflecting back on the show is that there really just is so much emphasis and desire to get married. And for a lot of people, I mean, we heard Manisha reflect that's become a little bit less important to her. But I'm curious whether you think, I mean, how would you kind of help people understand why marriage is so significant and why it kind of is the end all be all for so many families in India? I mean, why does it still hold so much weight?
Yeah, so there's both social, cultural, religious reasons. It's in that kinship system, historically, marriage is universal, and that means virtually everyone gets married. That was not the case in Northwestern European systems, so we're sort of used to a history where there's a relatively large number of people who don't get married, especially if they don't choose to, but that's not the case in this kinship system. And marriage is the way that families continue, and the entire society is built around the continuity of family. So through marriage, you bring in a daughter-in-law, and a daughter-in-law, her most important job is to bring children that continue the family. So it's about groups of families or families interacting rather than individuals interacting. So that's why marriage is so important, is to fulfill that continuity.
I only have about 30
seconds. And to be a part of society.
Yeah.
You know, that's also the reason they use the terms girls and boys, you might have noticed in the show. You know, and these are adults. Why are they saying girls and boys? It's because you're not an adult until you're married. You know, that's when you achieve adulthood. It's becoming married, having children, taking on those later roles in the family.
I only have about 30 seconds left. But as you've kind of watched the fallout of this show and all of the thought pieces and conversations, is there anything that's kind of lingering most with you about what the show has brought up among the Indian American community?
So what I found on the social media, at least, is people have been most talking about this caste issue and how they felt the show was hiding the caste thing for, you know, Americans who are not familiar. But what I found about the show is just how it gave a relatively unvarnished view on what is going on. And I think that's fascinating for all of us to see and to like or dislike as we choose, but to learn about how these processes are happening and how people are people in so many ways. You know, we see a lot, plenty of Americans who are not of Indian origin, you know, use matchmaking sites, get set up by their friends, engage in a lot of the behaviors that these people are engaging in. So we can see a lot of the similarities, but yet learn a lot about how, you know, bringing in your parents to marriage is also an important way to go for some people.
Kira Ellendorf, Associate Professor of Sociology and International Studies at Indiana University Bloomington. Thanks so much, Kira.
Thank you.
The State of Things is a service of North Carolina Public Radio from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I am Anita Rao.